Supervisors, please take your seats. All right, I will call the meeting to order. We do have a quorum at this point, but let's log in if you are here so that we can make that a matter of record. While you are logging in for the roll call, let me remind you, and Linda probably needs to remind me to remind you every once in a while on this. Every time you leave the room, please log out and then log back in when you come back in. Otherwise, it screws up the voting system. So please, if you leave the room to go to the break room or bathroom or whatever you need to do, please log out. Log back in when you come back in. And if you leave for good, even more important that you log out at that point. Tara Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If we leave before the meeting has adjourned,
yep,
and we log out, should we completely log off of our machines as if we were leaving at the end of the meeting?
You mean, yes, like close the, thank it you, down? Like turn it off? You're saying if you're leaving for good?
Before the end of the meeting.
Oh, okay. All right. I thought you meant like temporarily. Okay. If it's a one-time leave for good, yeah. It's a long day. How are we doing there, Linda? We're done? Okay. We have 31 people. That is a quorum. Let's stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, we'll start with the chair's report, and Charlie Handy is going to give a little talk real briefly on Badger Cooley transmission line. You heard that, Charlie, brief?
We were approached by ATC, American Transmission Corporation, with the initial Badger Cooley Transmission Line project open houses that are scheduled for September and October. Basically, they're looking at a 375 kV transmission line to go from La Crosse to the Madison area. The map that they give in the preliminary rounds of planning is obviously a very wide potential route for those transmission lines, and that's the map that we have. We have comment sheets in our offices. If you have comments that you want to give to these open houses, we have schedule dates, times, locations, and contact information. So if any of you have questions or comments or concerns, you can let us know and we can transfer them, or we can give you the contact information. You can call them directly. We will be, as staff, attending these open houses.
Any questions for Charlie? Okay. Thank you very much, Charlie. Before the meeting started, we were talking about how the agenda looks very short, so we're going to be here till midnight. Charlie did his part in keeping this moving along, so hopefully the rest of the board will do likewise, and we'll start with supervisor conference reports, and Jeff Schrader has not quite a conference report, but another important thing to mention.
Thank you. It's just been brought to my attention. I was gone for a week on vacation, but the moving wall, for the Vietnam Wall, is going to be at Riverside Park, and that's coming into town September 23rd. And that's going to come about 7 or 7:30 in the morning. They'll need people to help set it up. Also, the formal opening of the wall will be at noon that day. And they're looking for volunteers to, they're calling them guards, but what you would be doing would be helping people find people's names on the wall and do etchings and so forth. And I've got a email address here if you want to do something like that. It'd be much appreciated. And if you've never seen the wall, it's quite touching to see all the names that of the guys that were lost in Vietnam. So,
Jeff, how about do this? How about pass that around the room, and when it gets over to this corner, Mr. Ebert, if you could hold on to it to get it back to Jeff? Okay, but that'll give people, if you want to write down the email address or look at the rest of the information, give people a chance to do that. So thank you. And Leon, Paff, did you have something to follow up on with that?
Yes, I was just going to invite everyone tomorrow out to the solid waste at 9:30. Or 9 to 9:30, we're going to have open house. It's going to run until about 2:30 or 3 o'clock. You don't have to stay, but come on out. The haulers are going to be there. Quite a few of the solid waste board is going to be there. And I would invite any of the county board that could possibly make it, and the public, if they wish to come. It's open house at solid waste tomorrow.
Sounds good. Thank you. Anybody else have any reports or announcements? All right, let's move on to administrator report. Mr. O'Malley.
Yeah, I just wanted to follow up on Leon's comment. That's actually going to be the unveiling and report of the solid waste assessment. So it's your chance to see what's being discussed. Again, not recommended, but specific options that the communities have to consider regarding solid waste disposal, so as well as tours. That was on my list of things, too. And thank you for those folks that came early and got another update on the budget. Appreciate the good questions. Keep those coming. I just want to remind you that if you have any additional questions on budget as we go through, I'll keep reminding you, spend time with me or with Gary and ask those questions. Or if you want more information, we'll take whatever time is necessary. Or if you have suggestions on things you think we've missed, continue to raise those. Gary actually has some updated handouts. We did have one board member, Sharon Hampson, who scrutinized a number of our numbers and found a couple of mistakes in there. So I'm ashamed to admit that we have to be proofread by, no, actually I'm pleased that Sharon caught a couple of these things. So use these numbers. They were small changes, and I won't walk you through those, but they are copies. They are dated as well, so you can discard the other ones. Again, not a real significant change, but some of the details were incorrect. Now, the item that I do have under my administrator's report that I'll stick to rather than the other items are, I will ask the county board to approve my recommendation to appoint Jason Witt as our next human services director. By way of introduction, I included in our monthly report some of the description of Jason's background. A number of the board members obviously were involved in this selection and really had a great role to play. It's a privilege that I get to do so rarely. This is the seventh department head position I've been able to bring to you for recommendation, and among, I believe, what will be one of the most successful department heads that we've had. I did a great deal of reference checking on Jason's background. It's kind of unique to be in a position to actually submit a name to you that is not new to La Crosse. He graduated from La Crosse Central, UW-La Crosse. He has a master's degree in public administration from Madison. He has a law degree from Madison as well. And with that introduction, I will ask you to consider that, but I also want to turn it over to the chair of our Health and Human Services Board for any additional comments about the process. And then I'd like to introduce Jason Witt to you, considering your hopefully affirmative vote.
Thank you, Steve. Jason comes to us after a long interview process, and the last part of that process was three different panels in one day interviewing him, and we all agreed at the end of the day that Jason would be a wonderful new addition. And I also want to thank Dean Rupert, even though he's not here. He was the interim director, and he kept things going, which is not easy to do. He also applied for the position, and that's hard to do when you're an internal candidate, to put yourself out for another position. And I'm just looking forward to working with the new team. So welcome, Jason.
We need a motion and approval, or do you want to have Jason say a few words first?
Let's have him say a few words first, see if we like him.
The pressure's on, Jason.
No, I just like to say this selection would be an honor. It's exciting to be returning to La Crosse, which is my hometown. It's exciting to join such a quality team in La Crosse. County Human Services has such an excellent reputation throughout the state. And what really came through in the interview process was the community commitment to human services in La Crosse. and I really will look forward to working with you all and working with the community as we face the challenges that will be underway in the coming years. So thank you very much for your consideration for this position.
Is there a motion? By somebody? Jill Billing, seconded by Monica Cruz. Any questions or comments with regard to the motion to approve the selection of Jason Witt as Human Services Director? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. Welcome aboard. It really sucks that we're hiring people younger than me these days. I'm not liking that at all.
Exactly. Jason will actually start November 1st. He will not be a deputy county administrator. I will go with one deputy county administrator for a period of time. If I make a new recommendation, that is a decision that you have to make as well. So just to keep everybody in the loop on that, he will be attending the Health and Human Services Board meeting, if at all possible, on your budget review in October. So just a heads up, and he's going to try to, before he actually starts, attend a few local meetings with Human Services staff and start to do some integration even before he gets here. So I just thought I'd let you know that. Mr. Chair, there's a hand out there.
A hand up? Oh, yeah. John Menninger.
I was kind of half listening. Did you say...
Yeah, that happens between you and me. It's...
Did you say that Mr. Witt was going to try to make the rounds of the standing committees, engaging long-term care and...
Probably only Health and Human Services in October, but after that,
I'd
like
to... Sometime in the next few months.
That's
so
right.
He could be... introduce the other committees. In
that's
case,
right.
Yeah,
that'd be
so
good.
Have a little chat with them.
Great.
Great. Again, welcome, Jason. On your desk, so I don't forget, is the form if you're willing to sign up to make donations to United Way this year. Steve, who's in charge for the county this year?
Terry Pavlik in my office continues to lead on that, but she gets help from Renee and Linda. Renee in Human Services and Linda Cloette in Human Services as well. Okay. So Terry's always available to work with you on that. Please, I think it's important, even if it's a small contribution, I make a good contribution there as well, and I think it's really important to the community to support United Way.
And if you fill those out during the meeting, just turn them in to Linda before you leave, and she'll get them to where they need to go. Tara Johnson.
Sorry about... for the question, but would Terry be able to tell us what we did last year? Help us remember that in case we forgot?
Sure, and then we'll just sign up and double it then? Is that the...
Sure.
Add a couple zeros.
Yeah. Yeah, she can help you with exactly what you did last year. Yeah.
Reen Friedland.
For those of us who contribute a different way, either through our spouse or a different employment or something, is there still a reason why you would want us to give at least a minimal amount to, you know, get to a higher percentage contribution rate or something like that?
Yes, I think it indicates support. Even if it's a small dollar amount, it shows the number of employees and board members that are participating. So if you can, that would be great.
Okay, thank you.
Especially if we beat those people next door.
Right.
We like to look better than the city.
Yes, let's do that.
People who are on the city council and county board should only... There's a rule that you can only give through the county board. The city's not allowing you to do that. All right, anybody else have any other things before we go on to the next item? Okay, that's it for you then, Steve.
Yes.
Bill Shepard has a little bit on public record emails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before I give my little 2 cents worth on that issue, I got a call from Jeff Kuglich, who's a corporation counsel in Rock County earlier this week, and said that they were sorry to lose Jason in Rock County, but he certainly gave a glowing recommendation on behalf of Jason. So it's nice to have a local boy return home that can help us serve the public. What I'd like to do is talk a little bit about public records and emails. There is a reason that this subject has come up again, and I'll explain that a little bit. I've talked about this in the past, but we certainly have some new county board supervisors that haven't heard me give this little presentation before. I'd like to go back to a series of articles that ran in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel back in 2004, and Ozaukee County was the body that they were after at that point. Let me just give you the lead in to one of the articles that appeared on February 19, 2004. It says, Ozaukee County supervisors routinely discuss county business by email on their private computers outside the public view, a Journal Sentinel analysis shows. The article goes on to say that the Journal Sentinel had submitted public records requests to each of the 31 supervisors seeking access to their emails that were related to county business. And the article mentions that because the supervisors use their personal computers to discuss county business, each supervisor is the official custodian of those records, according to the Attorney General's office. The series of articles went on for several weeks, and as the Journal Sentinel got more emails from the supervisors, they found out a lot of things that the supervisors, for instance, were using their emails to debate who should hold the highest positions of leadership on the board. They were doing the kinds of things that we talked about on Monday night, using the emails to have these walking quorums or trying to get the vote established before the public meeting. So that certainly became a problem for Ozaukee County. The emails relate not only to the public records law, but also to the open meetings law, as I explained on Monday night. The reason that Steve asked me to bring this up, it's not just an academic issue. About 2 weeks ago, I think a lady started calling, I think Steve and Linda Stone, asking for records, email records of a supervisor here in this room. She was told that she should submit a written request. She did that. I was the one that received that request forwarded from Linda, actually. It went directly to Linda and then came to me. Let me just read to you what the request was. She's requesting copies of the following records: any emails sent, received, and deleted files to the email account of, and it gives the supervisor's email account, to Congressman Ron Kine or anyone in his congressional office or his campaign office. In addition, we are requesting any emails to Congressman Ron Kine from any personal email account that deals with any government business. If these records are available electronically, please send them to us. And this lady happened to be from Baldwin, Wisconsin, and apparently is a member of the Citizens for Responsible Government. So if you think that this stuff can't happen to you, believe me, it can, and it has. The supervisor may not even know that we got this because we had IT take a look at his email account. The email account noted by the requester happens to be one of the county email accounts, so IT can see what the action was, and apparently the supervisor doesn't use this account because the email box was filled and hadn't received anything for some time. So I responded that there was no records. She was asking for those records from July 1st, 2010, and the email box had been full before then.
Sharon?
Ron Kine sends us stuff on our county email.
Mm-hmm.
And does she want that to stop too?
I mean,
is there something wrong with that?
The receiving stuff, I suspect that what this person was looking for was that I think she had first asked if there were county computers that you supervisors have in your possession. I think she thought every county supervisor had a county-owned laptop or whatever. Well, we know that hasn't occurred. But I suspect that she was trying to determine whether there was political activity going on using the county system that was unrelated to your job as a county board supervisor. And, you know, in this political election year, I suspect that that would have been used in some manner. You can guess why.
Don Bina?
But the only thing wrong would be is if we or whoever it was would be going after funding for a specific project or something, because I can do all kinds of things on my own time, but...
Don, the problem is if you're using... The problem is if you're, especially if you're using your county email account, be very careful and limit that only to county things. If you have a separate email account, and let's say you emailed the Kind campaign and said, I'll be at your fundraiser next week, look forward to seeing you. That's not a problem. You send it from your personal email account. You send it from the county email account, that's a problem. Don't do that. If you get stuff from the Kind campaign or from anybody else receiving stuff, you don't have control over who you receive stuff from. That's not as big a deal as if you send stuff out. And so every once in a while we need to get Bill here to remind us, because occasionally we get lazy and that kind of thing can happen. But just be very careful.
Let me just, if I could, Jerry, just before we address your question, let me just tell you what, you know, there are two problems here that you could encounter. And I did look at the little guide that you get showing all the officials and where many of you have email addresses. And there are some of you that have the county email address, which is fine. There are some of you that use your personal email account, and that's okay, but you have to understand, as I read to you from this article, that if you use your own email account for both personal and county business, you are the custodian of those records. So if you get a request like those Ozaukee County supervisors did, you're going to have to sort through all your own emails and deliver those that relate to county business. So if you use the county system and only use that system for county business, that's not a problem. We have those archived, and our IT department can bring those up in whatever manner. I don't understand the technical part of how they come up with that, but they back up those emails every day and they're archived. And really, technically, those emails that you send or receive in dealing with county business are county records. They are subject to the public records law, and they should be saved for 7 years. That's our default record retention period at this time. So if you have the county email system, only use it for county business, and understand that whatever you send or receive on that can be viewed and may be the subject of an open records request. If you use your personal email, it's not illegal per se, but it can cause you some problems if you, like the Ozaukee County supervisors, get a public records request, have to go through your emails and come up with those that deal with county business. And what they're trying to find out oftentimes is, are you using the county system inappropriately? That has nothing to do with your county business. I would have to say also, in respect to your personal email accounts, there's a recent case in which the Attorney General has explained a little bit that personal emails not related to or relevant to county business are not public records, but if in any way they show a misuse of your office, they could be. So it's one of those areas that's still in the process. This email and electronic age has created new problems that really weren't envisioned when the public records law was requested, but each case that we see and each attorney general's opinion takes it a step further. So.
And this is actually the second one of recent vintage, or the second request. A year or two ago, I got a request for my records, and I think Bill's and Steve's, with regard to the ambulance issue, right, for all of our emails. And so I printed out all mine, and you guys all printed out yours. And I understand up in town of Onalaska, they've got the same thing going on where people are asking for those email records. So it's not a theoretical thing. It's something that can and does happen. So keep your county business separate from your personal business. County business always on your county account, personal business always on your personal account. If you blend the two, then you're going to run into some problems. I got a bunch of hands I saw up, so I'm going to try calling on people in the order that I saw them. Jerry Sobranek, you're first.
Thank you. I was wondering, on electronic devices like Twitter or texting, how does that fall into this category? If I was, I don't have one of these, but if I was, had one and if I was texting other board members on trying to persuade them how to vote for or against some kind of a resolution or any other thing that comes up, how is that handled? Is that ethical? Can these things be recalled if there is a question about open meeting laws?
Just ask the Calumet County District Attorney what trouble you can get into with texting and
no, Jerry
how that
said
can cause
texting, not sexting, like the sexting. District Attorney.
Yes, Jerry, answer to your question, texting. You know, I know a former City of La Crosse employee who was up in Wausau doing the same job got fired because of sexting. Is that what they call it?
So they call it sexting.
So yes, it's those kinds of things are retrievable, and they're just like emails. They can get you in trouble if you're using them inappropriately.
Same rules apply.
Same rules. Yeah.
Ray Ebert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Once in a while, I've got an email that comes from somebody in the county, and there's a disclaimer on the bottom that for my eyes only. But isn't it public record? So why? How can it be for my eyes only if it's a public record?
The law doesn't, I mean, anybody can put that on, and that doesn't distinguish whether or not it's a public record. If it's something to do with county business that you either sent or received, it is a public record and subject to disclosure.
So we should not be putting that on the bottom of our, it was from something from staff, I don't remember if it was, might have been from Gary or someone. Or, okay, is that what it was? Yeah, and it just makes no sense that that's
well,
on there.
Well, we have, there's that standard thing that comes on there. So, but, I mean, that doesn't mean that it couldn't be a public record.
Well, it probably is, isn't it? Unless
well, sometimes there's also a timing issue. For example, I've gotten some confidential stuff with regard to, like, staff hiring and you know, grievances and so forth that would be confidential now, just like when we go into closed session. Sometimes some of the stuff that we deal with in closed session, we don't release right away, but we have to at a later point. So an email that could be confidential today at some later point would be a public record. Mm-hmm. But I would say totally ignore, at least okay. If you think you're protected by it, saying that it's confidential. Yeah.
And Gary has just handed me an email, I guess, from one of our architects that has email and attachments are intended for the addressed recipient only. Well, anybody can say that, but it doesn't necessarily negate the public records law.
Okay, so we should assume that those really are public records.
Yes,
and
you
that
should.
Would be the safest to
yes.
make that assumption. Thank you.
Always. Dan Ferries.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bill, you mentioned under open meeting request that maybe that person wasn't even aware that they were being I don't want to say investigated, but look, you know, the emails were being looked into. Don't they have to be notified? And isn't there a process that, if they really wanted to, they could try to legally block that under open records?
No. In this case, he is aware because I told him.
Oh. Yeah,
but I mean, isn't that a legal proceeding that has to be done?
No, that you're. Basically, public officials like yourselves you have little protection. We can't give out your Social Security number, or your if you don't want us to give out your phone number, I guess we can keep that. But just about everything else. So you know, the records are different. There's only a few things that are. Employees have a few more protections, but you basically don't have much protection in that regard. So
and beyond the elected officials, county employees, the same thing. Your email records are our property, not your property. Yeah. So
I'd just like to be notified if, you know.
I would think that it would be a good practice for us to let people know that somebody has made an open records request with regard to their things. And I would certainly hope, Bill, that whether we do it before or after the fact,
sure,
that we do that. And as I said, I did notify this person.
Okay. Thank you.
Audrey Cotter.
Thank you. I've got a couple of questions, some of which are pretty simple, but I hope worth asking. If we send email to other elected officials at a different level, for example, state or federal, lobbying or expressing opinions in relation to county business, that's legit, I presume. But we, whatever we send, we need to always keep in mind, do we want, if ever there was a request, do we want, can we stand over it? Mm-hmm. So that one, and then in the event any of us was unfortunate enough to have to go back and produce copies of all our email for whoever's requesting it, can we charge for those copies like the county does or the city does?
Bill?
Anyway,
I answered the easy ones. The hard ones I turned to him.
The custodian can charge the actual reasonable and necessary cost for producing a document. So, you could charge the actual reasonable and necessary cost. That's what the statute says. We've set a policy in the county of 25 cents a page for hard copies, but we don't charge by the page for sending an electronic copy. We would charge search fees if they exceed more than $50, and sometimes we've had requests. For instance, in the jail, we've had requests that have exceeded that amount. So we've told the requester that they're going to be charged a rather exorbitant amount. Do they still want the record? And oftentimes they will reduce their request.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, the 25 cents includes some administrative time. Anyway, and my last question. Those of us who serve on City Council have city-issued computers. I use my city computer only for city and county business. There shouldn't be a conflict there, should there? I mean,
I would say that you perhaps the council should pass some kind of resolution saying that that those computers can be used by councilmen for other governmental business, such as your representation of your supervisory district. If you have a rule against it, it could be a problem for you. So you might want to clarify that it's
okay,
proper to use city equipment, because it. When you're doing county business, there may be an issue that's common to both, but not always.
But Bill, from an open records standpoint, there wouldn't be a problem. It'd be more
right
using city equipment for something else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you allow it, then I guess you folks make the rules. If you allow it, that's fine.
Whichever, though, the important thing is not to say anything in our email that we wouldn't want published.
I saw a lot of email addresses that were Gmail, so that's not a county address. I don't know if that's...
No, the city...
What?
That's Google.
Oh, that's Google. I would suggest that if you're doing county business, that you use the county email system, even if you're using a computer over in City Hall or wherever it is. So that you keep the two separate, because if you get a request and have them all mixed together in one account, you may have a very difficult time unraveling that whole matter. So,
okay,
use two separate addresses: one address for the city business, one address for the county business, and not mix the two.
Well, if
the county would have an email address that was conducive to usage, it would be very, very helpful. Between dots and dashes.
Once you enter it in, you never have to worry about it again. But the other thing that I would mention about if you use the county email address is if you go in through the county system, then it's archived, and you don't have to worry about producing those records in the future. We would have them here. So you don't have to keep your hard drive forever and ever and ever.
Okay. Thank you.
Vicki, did you have your hand up?
Just simply that those of us who use our own email, as long as we email every one of those correspondence to the each correspondence to the county that's sufficient.
You can copy. I think I previously gave you.
You gave us an account, right?
Yeah. Are you using that?
Yep. Anything that's county business.
Yeah, there is an email address that you can email. You know, just copy and it'll archive here.
Bill, why don't you come up with that again and at a future meeting, remind people of what that, or maybe even send out an email to people with that in it, so that people will remember that.
We'll do that.
Tara Johnson. Sharon Hampson.
When are we getting free computers?
Not in this budget.
I was thinking if the city wanted to do it for city supervisors, that'd be fine.
Oh, yeah.
Members who are also city supervisors, the city could. That would be cost sharing, right?
So is that your only question, Sharon? Okay. Jill Billings.
Bill, if we're using our personal email accounts and we have folders for county board business and committee and committee work, then do you see a problem with someone can't request your personal emails if you've got folders set up with your business stuff in it, right?
That's a good idea, Jill. If you prefer using your personal emails, at least you have them separated so that if there is a request and you've been diligent about using those folders, you could be able to produce that without having either having deleted some if you archive them in those folders, or worse yet, have it mixed up with all your personal ones. So, you know, that's an alternative, and I don't mean to infer that it's illegal for you to use your personal email accounts. It's just the difficulty of separating the personal, which, you know, the Supreme Court and the Attorney General have said are not public records, from the county emails that are public records. So.
John Menninger.
Yeah, just a comment, not a question. I don't want another email account. I got one at work. I got my BlackBerry in my pocket. I got a computer at home. It's a hassle.
Sure.
Okay, so I choose not to do that. There's probably 8 or 10 of us in here that don't have a county email account.
Right.
I still think, though, and I don't know how you resolve this problem, that I'm entitled to the same information that everybody else gets through the email. That doesn't happen. And I don't know how you resolve that. And I don't want to even need an answer now, but I think I'm entitled to it as a colleague.
There is an answer. IT will put you into the system. You can get in.
And we mail hard copies to people that don't have an email address. We try to give everybody the same.
You think I'm getting that now?
I believe so.
Yeah. When they type in supervisors or county board or whatever, some of those are the internal county addresses. Some of them are external, like Gmail or Yahoo or whatever.
I'm not getting those.
Well, we mail out the monthly report that we do, and at the same time, if you have a specific email address you want us to use for sending that information, we'll do that. I think there's only 10 that don't get that, but check with Terry and Margaret. Let's make sure you are covered, because we intend to give everybody the same thing.
Yeah, if anybody here is not getting stuff regularly from the county, that means that for some reason we don't have you in the system. Let, I don't know if they let you know, is that? Okay, let Linda know, and she'll get you into the system. All right, anybody else on this one? Okay, maybe we found the topic that was going to slow us down tonight. That's good, but good questions.
Thank you.
Important topic. All right, thanks, Bill. Cards and correspondence on the board, no meetings during recess, and I have a couple of appointments.
Chairman Doyle.
Thank you. I have two appointments. Mike Richards to replace Joan Curran on the La Crosse County Economic Development Fund Board, and Tina Weirs to replace Vicki Burke on the Lake Onalaska Protection and Rehabilitation District.
With Chairman Doyle seconded by Supervisor Cotter, is there discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carries unanimously.
Thank you. Consent agenda moved by Mr. Plesha, seconded by Mr. Sobranek. Any corrections or questions on the consent agenda? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. That gets us to Planning, Resource, and Development. Mr. Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Item 9-9, zoning petition 1849, petition filed by Tony L. and Teresa M. Brennigan to rezone Exclusive Agriculture District to Agriculture District A in the town of Washington. The committee voted unanimously to approve with two conditions. I move for your approval.
Moved by Mr. Meyer to approve the committee report, second by Mr. Bina. Did you say that was subject to two conditions, Mr. Meyer?
Yeah, they're listed on the blue copy.
Okay, so the committee report is to approve subject to those two conditions. Any questions or comments? Jill Billings.
For the last 2 months for the planning committee, I haven't been able to find their minutes from the public hearing online. And now the earlier meeting, I have been able to find them. So I don't know who should attend to that, and I don't know if anyone else has noticed
that. Charlie Handy, can you take care of that? He's nodding. He'll take care of it.
Thank you.
Anybody else? All in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
Item 9-10, zoning petition 1850 filed by Sean Gunnerman on behalf of Gunnerman LLC to rezone partial A from exclusive agriculture district to residential district A in the town of Unalaska. The committee voted unanimously approve. I move for your approval.
Moved by Mr. Meyer to the committee report, which is to approve, seconded by Dennis Monti. Any discussion or comments? All in favor say aye. Oops, wait, sorry, Sharon Hampson.
I didn't understand the map on this, and I just wondered if I could get some clarification.
Charlie will come in.
How can I help?
What's A and B?
Okay. Sharon's question was, what's parcel A and what's parcel B? I'll bring a map up on the screen.
Okay, because I didn't understand it from the minutes. And what is the purpose for A and B? I just couldn't get it clarified.
Parcel B is rezoned to residential district B for condominiums. Parcel A is rezoned to residential district A for single family homes.
Okay. And then on the part, the gray part above, I was wondering about those two cul-de-sacs.
That's an existing development.
Oh, okay. So you couldn't go through that and connect them?
No.
Okay, thanks.
What's the access going to be to these?
Through there's a number one on the screen. There'll be a road that's been approved by the town of Unalaska that goes through the agricultural parcel in that number one that'll access through parcel B and into A.
And then that little narrow thing next to B is the access to A?
That's correct.
Okay. Jeff Schrader.
Charlie, all these different lines here, does that more or less follow the wood lines? Or?
It's actually the town of Unalaska has a comprehensive plan that shows everything over 20% in steeper slopes to be conservation and everything under 20% in steeper slopes to be able for conservation residential. So these lines follow as much as they can using surveyor lines the topography where the 20% slope starts.
Maureen Friedland.
It looks like a gerrymandered county board district.
No comment.
There may be an opening for you in the redistricting committee. Other questions or comments? All right, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
Item 9-11, zoning petition 1851, filed by Daniel and Barbara Nansted, acting on behalf of Paul Krennett to rezone exclusive agriculture district to agriculture district A in the town of Shelby. The committee voted unanimously to approve with two conditions. I move for your approval.
Seconded by Terry Johnson to approve the committee report, which is to approve the petition subject to the conditions. Any questions or comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
Item 9-12, zoning petition 1852 by Howard C. Tracy, acting on behalf of Paul E. and Marilyn M. and Margaret and Howard C. Tracy and Susan K. Service to rezone from exclusive agriculture district to residential district A in the town of Farmington. Committee voted unanimously to approve with no conditions. I move for your approval.
Mr. Meyer moves to approve. Is there a second? Seconded by Mr. Paff. Discussion or questions? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
9-13, zoning position 1853, filed by Nicholas L. Frankie, acting on behalf of HF Eagle Properties, LLC, to rezone exclusive agriculture district to agriculture district A in the town of Farmington. The committee voted unanimously to deny this, and I move for your support to deny it.
Mr. Meyer moves the committee report, which is to deny. Is there a second? Seconded by Andrea Richmond. Questions or discussion? Mr. Ebert.
Just what was the reason? I didn't read your thing. The reason for denial was real quickly.
Charlie, you want to come in about the deed and all?
Oh, it's a long story. It's a mess.
Yeah.
That's the reason.
Should just stay in here, Charlie.
The hope is that if I go back. Original parcel there was 33 acres, was approved for Ag A zoning for one single-family home, which was an existing farmhouse, conditional. That landowner never recorded the deed restriction, which meant that the zoning never took place. A portion of the land was then sold, which is the portion that you're talking about. The farmhouse remained in place and stayed on a five-acre parcel. And so now the request is to rezone another parcel, which would add another residential property. So the existing landowner, knowing that not recording the deed restriction.
I understand.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir.
Other questions or comments? All in favor of the committee report, which is to deny, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
Item 9-14, zoning petition 1854, filed by Thomas A. and Jane A. Bus to rezone from traditional agriculture district to agriculture district A in the town of Holland. The committee voted unanimously to approve with two conditions. I move for your approval.
Moved by Mr. Meyer to approve the committee report, which is to approve the petition subject to two conditions. Seconded by Dennis Monti. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
Item 9-15, conditional use permit number 816, filed by Donald Frisch, acting as behalf of Arnie Revocable Trust, Ralph Marking, to existing 11 acres of hayfield for parking of vehicles during the University of Wisconsin Lacrosse National Cross Country Meet held each October at Maple Grove Country Club on land that is zoned agriculture district in the town of Hamilton. The committee discussed this at great lengths. We voted unanimously to accept it and to approve it with six conditions. I move for your approval.
Mr. Meyer moves the committee report, which is to approve subject to six conditions. Is there a second? Second by Bill Brockmiller. Discussion. Maureen Friedland.
Yeah, I wondered about this language in number four. The preferred driveway is an existing driveway. And I wondered about the enforceability of it if it just says it's the preferred driveway. Did you think that was the best you could get under that condition?
That was also the language that the town submitted to us, so we pretty much repeated that language. Obviously, there's some technical experts in the highway department and in the sheriff's department that may have a differing opinion as far as safety, so we didn't want to tie the hands of the technical experts.
Other questions or comments? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
Item 9-16, Bev Mock will handle because she's an expert on this type of house.
All right, turn it over to the expert.
This is regarding designation of the Palmer Lewis Octagon House as a La Crosse County Historic Site. Whereas the Palmer Lewis Octagon House, located in the town of Hamilton, La Crosse County, was nominated for county recognition as a historic site because the house retains the unique features of an octagon house and the structure remains intact. And whereas there are few octagon houses remaining in the state of Wisconsin, and this particular octagon house is on the National Register of Historic Places, and whereas following a public hearing on May 7, 2010, the Historic Sites Preservation Commission approved adding the Palmer Lewis Octagon House as a historic site to the La Crosse County Historic Sites listing. A legal description of the site is on the back of the pages that you have. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the La Crosse County Board does hereby approve adding the Palmer Lewis Octagon House as a historic site to the La Crosse County Historic Site listing. Be it further resolved that the designation of the Palmer Lewis Octagon House as a La Crosse County Historic Site shall be subject to all provisions of Chapter 22 of the General Code of La Crosse County, and this resolution shall be recorded at the La Crosse County Register of Deeds at La Crosse County expense. The fiscal note, the cost of recording this resolution is $30. I move for your approval of this resolution.
Moved by Bev Mock, seconded by Dennis Montai to approve the resolution. Discussion or questions? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
Now we'll go to item 9-17 for farmland preservation, and Marilyn Pedretti will take that.
Marilyn.
The honorable members of La Crosse County Board. A public participation plan for the preparation, review, and adoption of a farmland preservation plan for La Crosse County. Whereas La Crosse County is involved in developing a countywide farmland preservation plan, whereas such plan shall be consistent with the La Crosse County's comprehensive plan, which was adopted in March of 2008, and whereas a provision of Section 66-1001, Paragraph 4, Wisconsin statutes requires the governing body of a local governmental unit to adopt written procedures that are designed to foster public participation, including open discussion, communication programs, information services, and public meetings for which advance notice has been provided in every stage of the preparation of a comprehensive plan. And whereas the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors adopted a public participation plan that was used in preparation of the countywide comprehensive plan. And whereas La Crosse County Farmland Preservation Committee and the Planning Resources and Development Committee have recommended the adoption of a similar public participation plan that specifically relates to the preparation, review, and adoption of a farmland preservation plan for La Crosse County. And whereas such a plan is entitled Public Participation Plan for the Preparation, Review, and Adoption of a Farmland Preservation Plan for La Crosse County, and is attached hereto and incorporated herein by reference. Now, therefore, be it resolved that La Crosse County Board, in accordance with Section 66.1001, Paragraph 4, Wisconsin Statutes, and Subchapter 4 of Chapter 91 of the Wisconsin Statutes, hereby approves the Public Participation Plan for the Preparation, Review, and Adoption of a Farmland Preservation Plan for La Crosse County, attached hereto and incorporated herein by reference. Fiscal note, funding for staff work on this Public Participation Plan was included in the 2010 budget.
Moved by Marilyn Pedretti. How could you not vote for something that's read with such enthusiasm, you know? Seconded by Maureen Friedland. Discussion? All in favor? Oh, Ralph Geary.
At some point, does this require any funding to the county?
Charlie, you'll answer that.
Our plan, that's a joke, is to draft this in-house. Current staff should be drafting this. There will be a cost in printing, but we did receive a $30,000 grant from the state to pay for some of those staff costs and the printing.
Yeah, that wasn't my question. My question is, when you get the plan, is the plan going to, you know, with our budgetary problems, at some point in time, is the county going to be asked to put in a lump of money to do something, or is this all donations or grants or...
if your question is if I'm going to come back and ask for money in the future, probably. That's the nature of staff, right? As far as farmland preservation goes,
he's honest.
As far as farmland preservation goes, specifically for this plan, the major tool in farmland preservation program in this plan is tax credits to our landowners. If we adopt this plan and get it certified by December 31st of 2011, then our landowners are eligible for those tax credits from the state. Those are income tax credits. So for the major portion of this plan, no, the cost does not come to La Crosse County. Those are tax credits for our residents from the state. Are there other programs that we may ask for money for to do farmland preservation? Yes. But again, that would all be a policy discussion on your part.
The NPAF.
You just said December 31st, 2011 or 2010?
2011.
2011. So we have 14 months.
Yes. That's accurate.
Other discussion or questions? Seeing none, all in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. Is that it for you, Mr. Meyer?
That's it.
Thank you, sir. Executive Committee. Tara Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have item 9-18 to the honorable members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors regarding adoption of ICMA Deferred Compensation Program. Whereas the La Crosse County Board, pursuant to its authority to adopt employee benefit programs, wishes to adopt a deferred compensation program, and whereas the International City/County Managers Association program offers ease of access to investment research and individual account information not available through other programs, and additional investment options as well as state-of-the-art online account access information for timely monitoring of account performance, now therefore be it resolved that the ICMA Deferred Compensation Plan is hereby approved and adopted by this board as an optional retirement planning benefit of employees of La Crosse County. Be it further resolved that the Finance and Personnel Departments are authorized and directed to take such appropriate action as is necessary to set up and implement this retirement option for county employees. Be it finally resolved that the Finance and Personnel Departments are hereby authorized and directed to execute the plan documents for the plan, to communicate the terms of the plan to employees, and to take such further actions as may be necessary and appropriate to implement the plan and effectuate the terms and intent of this resolution. Fiscal note is the resolution would add a third option for employee deferred compensations as an addition to nationwide and the state plan. ICMA generally has lower fees to the participants than either of the two existing plans. The county does not provide any contribution. There will be some impact on personnel and payroll staff, but should be no more than the existing plans. I move its approval.
Moved by Tara Johnson, seconded by Vicki Burke. Any discussion or questions? Yeah, it was okay. All in favor say aye. Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. That it for you, Ms. Johnson? Thank you for your service. Health and Human Services Board, Sharon Hampson.
I have item number 9.
You're on, Marilyn. Okay. This is an ordinance to...
You know, Jason is going to say, I'm not coming to this county. I'm staying so far away.
Fun. This is an ordinance to repeal and recreate Section 11.45 entitled La Crosse County Smoke-Free Air Act, amend Section 11.50, Parent 1, and repeal Section 11.53, entitled Smoke-Free Dining of the General Code of La Crosse County, Wisconsin. I move for its approval and then ask to retain the floor.
Moved by Sharon Hampson, seconded by Terry Johnson. Sharon Hampson.
Thanks. This change is just to bring the portion of our code that refers to smoke-free areas into compliance with the new statewide Clean Indoor Air Act, which went into effect July 1st this year. All the details are in the analysis, and note that it goes on to the back side of the page. And as far as I know, there have been very few comments statewide, very few complaints statewide, so this is really not that big a deal. And I encourage you to approve it. Thanks.
And if there are any questions, I see Doug Moorman is here. Bill Feehan.
I thank the chair, and I move to refer this ordinance back to committee, and I'd like to retain the floor to add my comments.
Seconded by Joe Belskemper.
Yes. Go ahead. The concern I have with the ordinance, according to the state law, enforcement may or may not be given to the health department or local law enforcement. And the issue that I expressed in committee and that I still hold is that it is, I believe, quite likely that enforcement of this law, if we are going to see instances where there could be complications, is that it will most likely be violated in bar or tavern settings. And in those settings, there's also a great likelihood that the person involved may be intoxicated. And so from that standpoint, I believe the proper enforcement lies with the local police departments and sheriff's departments, where we have people that are properly trained for enforcing this law. And I don't see that the hours of operation of the health department are really going to allow them to enforce from that standpoint. And I don't see the advantage of having two different agencies enforcing the law. So I did speak to Sheriff Helgeson, and he felt that the Sheriff's Department would be able to properly enforce the law.
On the issue of referral discussion, Terry Johnson.
I don't get it. I mean, this came through committee. Supervisor Feehan, who's requesting the referral back, is on that committee. I guess I'm unclear what the effect would be of sending it back to that same committee. Is there some new information that wasn't talked about at the committee that is likely to bring a new ordinance back to us? I don't see the value of referring it back if there's not something new that's going to change and likely result in a new ordinance coming back. I mean, so at this point in time, I'm not supporting the referral.
I have a question for Doug Mormon. Doug, could you come up? It has to do with how would you envision enforcement? Does the way this written, can the health department and the sheriff department enforce, or only the health department?
It's what this does is takes the same language that we've been operating under for the last 5-6 years and continues it. This language enables either of the two organizations to respond. What we've tended to respond to, and it hasn't been very often, are to those circumstances in places where we are, the health department routinely does inspections, like grocery stores, restaurants, hotels, a variety of places that are covered, workplaces that are covered by this act.
Okay.
Does that catch it?
Yeah, that helps. Okay, on referral, Mr. Bina, on referral? If it's not on referral, I'm cutting you off.
Well, yes.
So far, so good.
The problem is we have a lot more questions to ask, and we aren't able to ask them now because you tied it up with a motion already. So there's the problem. So we can't get our questions answered.
Well, then what you're arguing is against referral, or would it sound like, that you have more questions?
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. Okay. Mr. Geary. Okay, anybody else have anything on referral, whether this should be referred back to committee? Jeff Schrader?
Can it be amended without being referred?
An amendment take precedence over referral if somebody offered an amendment? I think you have to vote on referral first? Okay. So referral has to be out of the way first before you could offer any amendments according to Bill. On referral, any other discussion on referring back to committee? Seeing none, let's try this with a voice vote. All in favor of referral back to committee, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
The ayes, let's see your hands. We're going to do it on the computer. Sorry, Linda. Okay, if you want to refer this back to committee, vote yes. If you do not want to refer this back to committee, in other words, keep it here for further discussion, vote no. Okay, yes to refer, no not to.
Leon, we're looking for your vote. Locked you out? Everybody? Okay, the motion to refer has failed on a vote of 9-24, so it is still on the floor. Now I'll take hands. People want to discuss, and I've got Ralph Geary.
Can I ask Doug a few questions?
Absolutely.
Okay. What are your hours? I mean, what is the hours of the health department?
The health department normal work hour or office hours are 7:30 in the morning until 5 in the afternoon, but the health department has staff that works 7 days a week.
Okay. Well, usually, I'm thinking if they have a violation somewhere, somebody probably picks up their cell phone or something and calls the police?
Yeah,
911 or something?
Yes.
Would they ever dispatch the health department?
No. No. There are rules associated with the individual smoking, and there are also rules associated with signage. Our involvement has routinely been related to working with owners and operators on appropriately signing their facility, providing them guidance and assistance in how to deal with customers that are having difficulty right. with the rule.
But you wanted to have the authority for your health workers to write out this ticket?
The health department, the health officer, the position that I serve, has responsibility and occasionally does several hundred times a year issues citations for various things. This could be among them. In the 6 years or whatever that we've had it, I've not issued a citation on this issue. We have, on the other hand, worked with folks to help them make the changes necessary in order to understand what the rules of the regulations are and what the health implications of those regulations are.
So if Mr. Feehan's amendment would pass where you couldn't write a ticket out, it really would be fairly insignificant since you've never written one out?
Yes. There are many rules for which I have not issued citations in a whole range of arenas. Yep.
Okay, Audrey Cotter.
Thank you. My question is for Mr. Moorman too. In the summary, it talks about that it includes a catch-all provision that prohibits smoking in all other enclosed places that are places of employment or that are public places. And it apparently removes the general exception for designated smoking areas. In my district, which would be under city law, but since you're the expert, it's mm-hmm. a good opportunity to ask. What do you do when if people gather outside a bar and become a nuisance in the evening with noise and in the public on the public sidewalk?
This regulation, of course, is outside of the city. This regulation only deals
yeah.
with unincorporated areas.
But
the health department would not be involved in a public nuisance or a potential crowd gathering kind of activity.
Even though all of those people are smoking?
If they're smoking outside, it would not be a violation.
Okay.
I'm not sure exactly how the city would handle it.
No, we have to get after doing something about it. But I just wondered if you'd any guidance in relation to it. But
no.
Basically, no. Thank you.
Sure.
Chuck Spiker. Marilyn Pedretti.
Have you you said 5 years you've had this?
Something
have you maybe. Ever gone into a bar at 1 o'clock in the morning to enforce such a law as this?
No.
Okay. So really what this is giving you the authority to alleviate the Sheriff's Department on some other issues. You're not going to go into bars and push this issue. You want to be able to enforce where you already inspect. Is
Correct.
That what this is?
When this original legislation came about, the Sheriff's Department and was interested in having some help in dealing with those issues outside of where you're trying to arrest somebody and put them in cuffs. My conversation with the sheriff on the current sheriff with this particular legislation was that he was comfortable with it.
So it's kind of like the ones that aren't as threatening, so to speak. The things that you already do inspections for other things is what I hear you saying.
We do.
It would just be added to that.
Yes, we do inspections of taverns and bars also, but the purpose of the inspection is not necessarily to... is to look at the delivery of safe services and healthy services in that facility. And if there's smoking occurring in the facility, we would work with the bar owner and to figure out a solution to that. I would not expect that we would be interested in issuing a citation as the first step in trying to solve the problem.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Sharon Hampson.
Thank you. I just want to point out again, this is just to get our code in line with state law, and it states clearly on the back side of the analysis that the owner is the first person, the person in charge is the person that enforces it. Second, local law enforcement and the DOJ. Third is the health department. Now, I don't see this ever getting past the owner and law enforcement and getting to the health department level. However, if they do, the health department enforces many parts of our code, pet licensing, restaurants, wells, sanitation of all kind. This is not unusual for public health. Actually, the public health officer has quite a lot of legal ability to do things. And this is not in any way extraordinary.
Jim Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, just a clarification. The ordinance that we currently have, or the one we passed in 2003, was only for restaurants, and it was not for bars. And so, yeah, that's correct. We haven't had any issues with restaurants, any major problems. But I think Supervisor Feehan's concern is not so much the restaurant end of it, but it's the bar establishment. My question is this. I guess, Mr. Moorman, do you think this would provide any confusion to the establishment owners regarding enforcement in terms of who's ultimately responsible?
I don't think so.
Jay Johnson. Don Vina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This, you know, I read through here and I don't quite understand. Are you regulating the same businesses you were regulating under the past ordinance, or are you expanding into the private sector workplace?
We're meeting the state.
We're
following the state guideline or the state regulation, which is all workplaces.
All workplaces. With how many employees? I can have a workplace of one or two. Does that include me then as a farmer out here that might employ two people? I don't know why I do that, but what does it include?
Sure.
Because the last ordinance didn't include us to go as far as this one is, and I'm not sure how far this goes. That's why I'm asking the question, because you say in the second page that it exempts a private residence and a room for assisted living and a tobacco bar. Does it include everything else in the county then?
Maybe Corporation Council can help me. My understanding is that it does not impact individual family farms, but I don't know all of the...
Well, I'm not necessarily making a farm issue, but a business that might have one or two workers in a small garage or a...
My understanding
something.
Is,
but
yes.
Is there minimum employees you have in here?
We'll let Bill answer that.
Okay.
Mr. Bina, there is a list of enclosed places, and there is no minimum number of employees. If it's an enclosed workplace, if there are two employees, it's prohibited. And
this
is a state law. It's going to be in effect whether or not you pass this or not. The advantage of passing this is that it will give law enforcement and the health department the authority to write citations rather than force the DA to do a civil complaint, which is a much more cumbersome procedure. So that's the advantage of passing this ordinance and adopting the citation method. It'd be like a traffic ticket.
So it goes a lot further than the last ordinance did. And that's what I was wondering, because it didn't really specifically say that, and I didn't really look up the state statute, so I don't know what exactly is in that either. But
The state law goes farther than any county ordinance has previously prohibited.
Okay.
Leon Paff.
Thank you. I was wondering about the nursing homes for the older folks. Is there still going to be an exemption for them, some of them, or was that going to end?
No.
Is that going to end here right now?
Yes.
Because it is existing right now that outside nursing homes, some of them can be wheeled out?
I don't believe. My understanding is that the law affects all workplaces, all institutions, including nursing homes. You can't allow smoking. Smoking is not allowed inside of a nursing home.
Not inside the nursing home, but how about if they're in a wheelchair and they're wheeled out for the break when ladies take a break, or the men take a break, or whoever takes a break?
The key is enclosed places. If you take a person outside, you're not in an enclosed place.
Okay, then the ones in the people smoking, it's still existing smoking in the nursing home, can be wheeled out on the county property and smoke.
Yes, this deals with the public in a broad way. The county does not have a policy that prohibits smoking on outdoors in the county. We don't have that policy.
John Menninger.
Yeah, just two questions. This fine is awful excessive for smoking a cigarette, $263. It's crazy, actually, but... in the city of La Crosse, if you get the same $100 ticket and you go to municipal court, do they still have the same fees on there? Would a $100 ticket in the city be different than a $100 ticket in the town?
Well, I checked with the clerk of courts. There are some state charges that I think apply to municipal court as well. They're probably, I don't know that they charge a jail surcharge. So I'm a little uncertain of that, Mr. Menninger.
Okay.
It could be somewhat less, but there are some additional costs.
Because I know there's some, I'm not an expert on the law, but there's some tickets you can write that don't have all the state surcharges on, and some that do. Depends on how you do it.
Yeah. We have to prosecute through circuit court, so all of the surcharges are applicable to this, as well as any other ticket that would be issued by the health department.
All right. Then just one other question, and it's this 20-foot rule that's in here for all county buildings, which would include nursing homes, I suspect. If they're going to smoke, you got to push them way outside the boundaries of the building so they get good and cold. But a lot of these poor souls that come into justice sanctions here also smoke. So we don't have one more way to harass these people. Are we going to put signs up that say you have to be at least 20 feet away from the entrance of this building, or are we just going to surprise them?
No, there are signs already.
Do they say 20 feet at every entrance to the county?
They don't say 20 feet, but they say you can't smoke beyond this point. And there's
Is it written on the ground?
Yeah.
No, there's a cigarette butt thing.
That's right next to the building. This is 20 feet away from the entrance.
Right, and that's where they are. I know that there's one out on the...
not on the south end.
Yes.
I think
there is,
yeah.
There's a sign there?
Yes.
Yeah, it's
painted on the cement.
It's a post kind of thing and with a sign on it that says you can't smoke beyond this point.
Okay, we'll recess for 10 minutes and go look.
Okay, I just want to make sure that people aren't surprised by this, that they know what the rules of the game are. That's all. If you're going to give people these huge tickets that don't have a pot to pee in, I want to know they know what the rules are. That's all. Mm-hmm. I think that's fair enough.
Ray Ebert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, my question is about how many people you would designate, and I would assume that would only be during their work hours. So if one of your designees was out for dinner or something, someone's smoking, they would only be if they were during work hours. They could not, like a police officer is on duty all the time.
It would be part of their normal work activity.
And they could not do it outside of that normal work hours.
Yes, I'm not sure
what
you mean
by. In other words, if one of your designees is out for dinner,
they would have to be working. Yes, they're working. The health department has staff that work.
Yeah, I'm not
all
saying
the time.
It has to be during their. Do you understand, Chair? Their normal work hours. So they couldn't go out to dinner, and then decide they're going to go over and write a ticket.
Yes, because they're not on. They're not at work. They're not working.
Okay, and I'd also like to thank the Corporation Council for explaining why we're doing this. So there is a reason that they don't have to charge a criminal error. This makes it a much easier way to charge it. Correct. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
All right, I have a couple people that want to talk for a second time, but is there anybody for a first time around that I have not gotten to yet? Okay, then Bill Feehan, you're up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I'd like to point out that this is there are options within the state law, and the exact wording is that this body may rest enforcement with the health department and local law enforcement. So we do not have to put our health department in charge of enforcing the new smoking law. And this is an area that I do have some expertise in because I am ServSafe certified and I've worked in the food service industry my whole life. I've owned a bar and restaurant. So I'm familiar with the role that Mr. Mormon's department holds and the areas that they are accustomed to dealing with. I feel that the new state law expands the reach of this into new businesses, bars and taverns, and those places do operate during different hours. There are people there who are occasionally intoxicated and irrational, and I do not believe that his office's people are properly trained to deal with those situations, and I don't see the advantage of having enforcement in two different departments. This ordinance that we're about to vote on does take enforcement to a higher level in the county. As Supervisor Mettinger points out, the citations are quite substantial. So I would just ask my fellow supervisors to consider whether or not it is wise to have two different departments enforcing the same law. And in my view, it is not. And we should leave enforcement with the people that are trained to deal with the potentially unique situations that they're going to encounter in some of these bars and taverns.
Sharon Hampson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is not an opportunity to debate state law. And if you don't agree with the state law, take it up with the state. This is only bringing ours into line with a law that's been in effect since July 5th of this year. So it's not like we're springing it on anyone. And that the Lakeview Healthcare Center, note the name health in there, I was there yesterday and they have a sign that says they have an outdoor area designated for smoking. Previously they had a smoking room inside and that was a huge concern for people at Lakeview. And that's why the county ordinance I tried to push before didn't fly. Now they have a designated outdoor area. And once again, you look at it, it goes to the owner first, then law enforcement, then the health department. Doug, how many calls have you had since July 5th on smoking?
None.
Thank you.
Jill Billings.
I hate to correct Supervisor Feehan, but he mentioned that the health officer is in charge of enforcing the law, but really the ordinance says that the person in charge is the person who owns a facility, and as Supervisor Hampson pointed out, then it's law enforcement personnel and the Department of Justice, then it's the county health department director, and then it talks about citizens who can register complaints. I think that I'm fine with the health officer having this ability to issue a citation in their back pocket if they're maybe at a bar inspecting for cleanliness for food service or something like that. I don't know why we wouldn't want them to be able to have this when they already issue citations, have the ability to issue citations for other things. And have experience with that. And especially if the sheriff has said that he supports this, I have no problem with it.
I have a question for Bill. Bill, do we have any other areas of law where there's dual enforcement between, say, the health department and the sheriff department?
Yeah, I think he fed me the answer, so I'm...
Oh, come on.
No, but I think Stephen mentioned or asked if in the dog control, and I think there is... we've designated humane officers to help in dog control, but I think that Doug's people could do that, and also law enforcement is sometimes called upon to help with dog control. So there are instances where there's multiple agencies that get involved, and this would not be unique.
Brad Conko?
Pass. I think Jill pretty much covered what I had to say.
I have nobody else on the list. Are we done? Okay. Ralph, we're going to give you the last word.
Oh,
Gary.
Thanks. So, Bill, we're not debating whether we're in compliance with state law. Obviously, we are. But state law allows us to designate who the enforcement mechanism would be. There was something I need a little clarification on.
Well, I don't disagree with Mr. Feehan that when they use the word may, it's a discretionary matter. Certainly it makes sense, and as he has argued, to have law enforcement. I don't see our health folks going into a rowdy situation. I think that, as Doug has outlined, there are many instances where they're in taverns or bars during normal working hours where there may be smoking, and they could address those situations. So yes, it's within your discretion, but it's something that I know that many counties around the state have also granted to their health departments.
This All right. Chuck Spiker gets the really last word.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bill, would you answer me this? This is unincorporated area, so right. Therefore these violations would be brought into circuit court, right?
Yes, that's correct.
And circuit court, they add on a lot of different fees in that, and that's why we have municipal courts that don't add on those fees now. Isn't that why Onalaska and Holman that?
Yeah, I'm not real clear on what they add on or don't. I guess I tried to respond to that when Mr. Menninger asked. The add-ons in circuit court are required by the state of Wisconsin. We don't. Our clerk of courts does not have, or the judges do not have any discretion on that.
This is why Holman, Onalaska, and I think there was a couple more formed the circuit or the municipal court. Because of the matter, you could get a speeding ticket in one of the villages or cities, be one price, get a speeding ticket in the unincorporated area, and it was a pretty fair sum of money.
I was asked, I think that's true, that they're trying to get some consistency and of course, efficiency by having one judge over multiple jurisdictions. I did look at the issue of whether we could go to some municipal court, and I don't find any authority that La Crosse County could do that. I think we have to go to circuit court. I don't think we have a choice about that.
Okay. Thank you.
Don Meyer.
I call for the question.
Any objection to closing debate? Seeing none, debate is closed. We'll vote on the computer. If you are in favor of the ordinance as presented, vote yes. If you are opposed, vote no. The resolution or the ordinance passes on a vote of 27-6. Is that it for you, Ms. Hampson?
I have nothing more to add.
Marilyn still did a better job. I'm sorry. I like her better anyway. Public Works and Infrastructure, Mr. Spiker, who's even my favorite of all.
Right, right. Can we have a light detector test on that, Mr. Chairman? Item number 9-20, approval of relocation under a right-of-way acquisition for the County Trunk Highway S Sand Lake Road project. Whereas the City of Onalaska has received State of Wisconsin Surface Transportation Program urban funding for County Trunk S Sand Lake Road project, and whereas the project requires acquisition of right-of-way for construction of the roadway, and whereas La Crosse County must provide a relocation order and right-of-way plat for the lands located outside the corporate limits of the City of Onalaska. Whereas the City of Onalaska will require all necessary right-of-way for the County Trunk Highway S Sand Lake Road project on behalf of the La Crosse County. Whereas the City of Onalaska shall administrate all necessary coordination documentation for the right-of-way acquisition. Whereas the City of Onalaska will pay for all the costs associated with the right-of-way acquisition for County Trunk S Sand Lake Road project. Now, therefore, it be resolved that La Crosse County Board does hereby approve the attached relocation order and right-of-way plat for the County Trunk S Sand Lake Road project. Be it further resolved that the County Board Chair, County Clerk are authorized and execute the relocation order after approval of the Corporation Council. Fiscal note, there is no cost to the La Crosse County for this project. I move for approval, and the committee approved it unanimously.
Moved by Mr. Spiker, second by Mr. Paff. Questions or discussion? Denny Osgood's here if anybody has any questions. Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
Item number 9-21. You look under Public Works there, it says the vote was 6-0, but it was not. It was the vote was 5-1 for approval. Approval of 2011 temporary lease with Water Place 1 LLC. Notice this is 2011 now. We already have one agreement with 2010. Whereas since the mid-1980s, South Bay Marina, which is located on the waterfront adjacent to the Park Plaza property, has been popular with many local boat owners and tourists who require a dock slip for their boats. Whereas Water Place 1 LLC, Water Place 1, is planning on operating the South Bay Marina in 2011, with the boat operation running from May 1st, 2011 through November 30th, 2011, and they are asked to enter into a short-term lease with the La Crosse County this time to enable them to lease boat slips for the 2011 season. Whereas La Crosse County is interested in marketing Park Plaza property for a sale of in 2011. Whereas Water Place 1 agrees to pay rent in an amount of $10,000 for the 2011 season, mow the grass, pick up the trash, provide water and electricity to the premise, and pay any costs associated with the such utilities. And if they also agree on other terms in the lease that the county determines are necessary to allow it to prepare, market, and sell the property. Then a lease for a year commencing on December 1st, 2010 and ending November 30th, 2011 is in the public interest by allowing the existing boat marina business to operate for the next season while the county continues to seek a developer for the property. Now, therefore, it be resolved that the County Board Chair, County Administrator, and staff are authorized to negotiate a 2011 agreement with Water Place 1 that includes a lease payment of $10,000 and other terms and conditions that are in the existing lease and additional provisions that will allow the county to take any and all steps necessary to effectively prepare, market, and offer the Park Plaza property for sale in 2011. Further, it be resolved that upon successful completion of negotiations on the terms of the 2011 lease with Water Place 1, the County Board Chair is authorized to sign the lease agreement for the 2011 season with approval of the Corporation Council for term to expire on November 30th, 2011. Fiscal note, no cost to La Crosse County. The rent payment will be deposited in Park Plaza account, land rent account. I move for approval, Mr. Chairman.
Moved by Mr. Spiker, seconded by Bill Brockmiller. Discussion. Audrey Cotter.
Thank you. I noticed that the last whereas includes mowing the grass, picking the trash, and providing water and electricity. Now, is the area defined only their immediate area, or are they going to take care of the whole thing?
Charlie will answer that.
The area defined in the lease as on the premises is the area that surrounds the existing Bikini Yacht Club. So it's only the small area that they're leasing, not the entire site.
So can we use some of the rent to ensure that the remainder is kept decent looking the rest of the summer?
Next year. I'll make that recommendation to Mr. Spropoulos.
That would be appreciated. Thank you, especially in the interest of economic development.
Ralph Geary.
Who owns these boat docks?
Water Place One LLC.
Yeah. Who is that individually? Do we know?
It's a corporation.
Okay. Who called up from the corporation wanting to move this up?
We've been negotiating with a couple of parties, but Jay Heschler is one of the parties.
And Noel Jordan, did he call up and request us too?
You've been
negotiating with Jay Heschler?
I don't believe Noel Jordan is a party to Water Place One anymore.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. Now I know. How many boat docks are there?
I'm guessing around 24.
24?
That's the number that juts out, but there's multiple. That's the number of slips. There's multiple dockages on each slip. Approximately 120, something like that.
120 boats can dock there?
Number of possible potential boats.
Okay. Well, the city of La Crosse rents a place up on, was it Clinton Street, behind the, where you drop your gas clippings. You can dock 29 boats there. They pay $10,000 a year. Just informational, I guess. It was always done in the spring. Why are we moving this up? Every year they always came in either March or something, and February, March, April. We just did one in April, and Now it's 5 months later. We're doing next year's.
Yeah. The perception of not being able to remove your boat from a slip in another portion of town has increased the demand for slips for 2011 in this location. They'd like to be able to guarantee to those boat owners that they will have those slips open for the 2011 season.
Okay. Does the town of Campbell support this?
It's not in the town of Campbell.
No, but my understanding is they're trying to get people that are docking their boats in the town of Campbell to relocate. And Campbell, that's somebody mentioned at the meeting that some people may want to relocate instead of docking where they are.
There's no attempt by us or by Water Place One to say you should go over here. It's just that perception that happened with the other incident this year has caused increased demand for boats to slip in this location.
Okay, I'm saying Campbell looks like out of all the governmental units is on the hook for the most, and I thought they may have had some leverage because I'm not talking about the skipper liner getting sold. I'm talking about didn't they all own the waterfront, some of the waterfront, and maybe that they were could leverage or make it to get more money to access the docks?
I don't see how this would affect them at all with the town of Campbell.
Well, I thought they might be trying to do some leveraging. So
with
they get more money.
The town of Campbell's leverage is the fact that they own that waterfront, and so whoever wants to buy the skipper liner operation has to deal with them because of that. But that really has nothing to do with docking of boats at these slips.
Okay. Well, if
the fact that there are slips at the town of Campbell there, that fact in and of itself takes care of that issue. Whether there's boats in those slips or those boats moved to this place really wouldn't have any impact on that.
Okay. Well, my motion in committee, and it's still good, I'm going to make it here, was to amend it to $20,000.
Moved by Ralph Geary to amend it to $20,000. Is there a second? Seconded by Jill Billings. Discussion on the amendment. Chuck Spiker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Have you talked to them? This was brought up in committee by Supervisor Geary, and it was defeated in a 5-1 vote. The $10,000 in 2011 would be $10,000 off the tax levy, is why we did it. Does anybody know, the staff know, what they said for $20,000? Because if we get $20,000, they say no, then we're going to, I guess, put a fence up around that area or something? There's 30, 35 parking spaces?
We have had conversations with them. 2 years ago, our lease was for 1,000. Last year, we increased the lease to 10,000. They were obviously not thrilled with that. That's a thousand percent increase in the lease. We talked with them about the discussion that was had at the Public Works and Infrastructure Committee about increasing it to 20,000. They obviously weren't thrilled about that. Do we know if it's a deal breaker if they're not going to do the lease if we up it? No, we don't know that. In negotiations with them, you know, the $10,000 number is based on some numbers that we've run as staff. We recommend the $10,000 number. We don't recommend the $20,000 number, but if that's your decision, that's what we'll take back to them.
Steve O'Malley.
The other response that I had for the committee when you discussed this is not the last dealing we're going to have with our adjacent landowner. The point is we're trying to build a cooperative relationship and still get the county well reimbursed and get this developed. There are mutual easements that have to be resolved between the parties. This party has responded to everything we asked them to do in the last lease. They've removed the fuel tanks that they're expected to. They're going to remove the Bikini Yacht Club. We need their cooperation on development, and as we continue to move towards that direction and get it prepared, doubling again their rent is not a way of reaching out the olive branch to gain cooperation. It's almost like cutting off your nose to spite your face. You want cooperation with this party so that we can finally get it back on the tax rolls and see tax base at the entrance to our community.
Andrea Richmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm looking at the lease that was approved by the Public Works Committee in April and by the County Board, but as Mr. O'Malley mentioned, the underground fuel tank, that had been removed, is that correct? But at the end of this season, that structure, deck, and building need to be removed. So now with this new lease, are we going to have that understanding that that definitely is going to be taken down on November 30th?
Yeah, there's a scheduled demolition date of October 22nd. Okay. We know because of the fact that they also have a bond that says they'll take it down, and we can cash that bond in if we don't. So we have some pretty strong enforcement ability if we need it. We don't need it. They're very willing to do this work. This is necessary for both parties to market the site for potential development, and that's the goal. We're working with Water Place One to market this site for potential development. Also, leasing this property to them for slips generates activity. There's people out there moving around, getting on their boats, getting off their boats. There's activity out there that assists with marketing. Also, the value of those slips being there and being active creates a higher value to our site, even though we don't own those slips. So all of these factors are things that we're discussing as we're negotiating this process with Water Place One.
Jay Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First a question, then a comment. I was given to understand at the Public Works Committee level that we're leasing around 30 parking spaces. We're not leasing the slips. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Right. Now, $10,000, $20,000, even without all of the improvements and maintenance they're doing, seems like a very exorbitant amount of money for 30 parking stalls. And I would encourage board members to follow the committee's recommendation and keep this lease at $10,000. Thank you.
Jeff Schrader.
Andrea Richmond answered my question about the demolition of the building this year.
Bill Feehan.
My question's for Charlie. You mentioned that staff has reviewed the situation and come to the judgment that $10,000 is the right figure. I would like to hear some of the rough calculations of how you came up with that number.
Let me answer that, Bill, because I was the one who came up with it.
Okay.
Charlie and Bill and Steve, refresh my recollection if I have this wrong, but what we did was we counted the number of slips, we looked at how much we charge right here in our parking lot per spot, and then we multiplied that out, and how many months, right? Wasn't it something along those lines?
Right, and then we multiplied it by two and divided it in half.
There you go. If you haven't been around here for a
while,
you don't
get
that one. That's an inside
joke. Well, I guess my question, as I look at this situation, we have an ongoing business for dockage of boats, 120 boats there, so it's a substantial business. and they're dependent upon the property that the city owns. The 30 parking spaces are essential.
County owns.
Thank you. But that the county owns are essential to the operation of that business. I'm thinking as a businessman right now, I have to agree with Mr. Geary. We own property that's essential to the operation of their business, and if I owned that property privately, I think that I would want a return on that investment. Future considerations are great, but what about the value of that property if they were to purchase it for parking purposes?
Mr. Doyle, can I respond to the number? The average parking space downtown is rented for $30 to $35 a month. Times 30 spaces is about $900. So $900 for however many months you believe that they use this certainly is less than $10,000. To double the $10,000 after we went from $1,000 a year to now $20,000 is being proposed does not seem reasonable and in good faith working with somebody when that's not the cost that anybody rents a space for, even in downtown, which is a higher used area for rental of parking spaces. Does anybody know where downtown they rent a space for more than 30 or 35 a month? I think that's the going rate, as I understand it. Certainly, we don't have an improved parking lot. We don't have enforced parking over there. This was an olive branch that still got us more money out of renting 30 spaces than we were getting last year before the chairman interjected.
I have Ralph, who's spoken once, Leon, Jeff, who's spoken once, Don Meyer, and Brad Conkle. I think that's it. So let's go to Leon Paff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think we should be in the business of encouraging business, too, instead of trying to punish businesses just because we own the lot and we can lock them out of it. That's not any way for the county to act. So I think that this $10,000 is plenty. And that we should encourage business and work with them because the future, our future, is at stake too when selling the property. So, thank you,
Don Meyer.
As a former boat owner, those 120 spots are not all that great because the current over there is extremely fast, and sometimes they go unrented because people won't take the slips because of getting in and out. So, it's not that great.
Brad Conkle.
I'd like to call the question.
Motion to close debate by Brad Conkle, seconded by Don Meyer. All in favor of closing debate, say aye. Opposed, no. Point of information, Mr. Schrader.
Do I wait until after the vote?
My question was going to be, is the county in any way hurting themselves with the development of this lot by tying it up with this lease?
Let me bend the rules a little bit and let Bill answer that. I think that's a legitimate question. And then we're going to take the vote.
Well, we want to build into this lease some additional provisions that will allow us to continue to prepare the site. There are a number of we've had this survey done, and there are a number of easements on the site that we need to resolve, and I think that they're going to be a party to those. So that's one of the reasons that we're interested in negotiating them additional terms to get their cooperation on resolving those easements. Their utility easements often that serve the prior use of the motel that we need to get out of there. So I guess that's a long answer to, we think that we can resolve these issues with them and it will not harm our future ability to sell the property.
Anything further, Charlie?
For more clarity, we have an out clause in the lease that allows us, if we have a purchaser that does not want the lease to be in place, that we can assign the lease, and then that purchaser would negotiate that out clause with Water Place One. So it does not hurt our ability to sell this property.
Okay, now I want to try that motion to close debate. All in favor of closing debate, say aye. Opposed, no. The noes are Ray Ebert, Tina Weirs, Marilyn Pedretti, Maureen Friedland, Bill Feehan, Ralph Geary, Jim Burns. Is that two-thirds yes? How many no's do we have? Seven no's, and yeah, I think that would be two-thirds to close debate. So debate is closed. Vote on the computer. If you are in favor of the resolution for the lease, vote yes. If you are opposed, oh, that's actually what we're voting on. I'm sorry. Thought I'd just sneak it by and we'd get out of here quicker. All right, so we're voting on the 20,000 versus 10,000. So if you are in favor of 20,000, vote yes. If you are, roll call. If you're in favor of 20,000, vote yes. If you are opposed to 20,000, vote no. Yes, 20,000. No, not 20,000. Did his catch up? His did take? Yeah. Okay. The amendment fails on a vote of 4-29. So we are to the resolution as presented. Any further discussion? Seeing some, just, Ralph Geary.
Just some clarification of what Jay said. The difference between the city and the Park Plaza one, all they rent over there is the land. They own the docks. They mow the grass. They do all the maintenance. They pay $10,000 for 29 slips. It was made to sound like maybe the city owned the docks. They don't. They own the land. Those people park their trucks, their boat trailers or whatever there, take care of all the electricity, take care of everything.
Bill Feehan.
I think I heard Mr. Handy say that the provision that protects the county in this lease is that it gives Water Place One authority to negotiate out of this lease with a prospective buyer. Doesn't that place Water Place One,
opposite. We can turn it over, we can assign it to somebody else if we sell the property.
But Water Place One,
then they're negotiating with them, not with us.
Yes, they're negotiating, but that gives Water Place One leverage with any prospective buyer, doesn't it, of that lot? That buyer will have to negotiate this out of this lease. Water Place One could ask for consideration of some sort.
Charlie, my understanding was that we could just terminate the lease if we chose to. Is that incorrect?
We have definitely the ability to terminate the lease, but only if both parties do not comply with the terms of the lease. The assignment provision gives us the ability to assign the lease, and then the next the details of the lease aren't completely drafted yet. This gives us the authority, if this is approved, the authority to finalize those, but that assignment is where we have the ability to assign it, and then they negotiate the out.
Okay. The other thing I would add, Mr. Feehan, is that if we have a buyer that comes in next spring, by the time they're ready to move dirt around, that boat season is likely to be over. I mean, that's our expectation, is this wouldn't affect them. They're going to do their planning first, and before it would have any impact on them, that lease would have expired, and they would simply refuse to renew it then for a subsequent year.
But as far as the leverage, they have significant leverage because they own water frontage and the slips, and that's part of the whole process of this document, this negotiation, this marketing is – if we work together with Water Place One, then it's much more marketable site because they do have significant leverage. Yeah, we have leverage here on the lease. They have leverage on the waterfront. It's a mutual relationship.
Anybody else on the resolution? Seeing none, all in favor of the resolution, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The noes are Bill Feehan and Ralph Geary. That resolution passes. And is that it for you, Mr. Spiker? Thank you, sir. That gets us to suggestions for future agenda topics or announcements. Tara Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just in light of this resolution 921, it might be helpful to, I don't think we've done this recently, to see a map of the site, remind supervisors of the full site and this parcel that we're talking about, And also just some general background, like what the outstanding taxes are, and you know, just some general information. Maybe it could be in the monthly report next time around. So
I think a Park Plaza update at a soon-to-occur policy planning.
I was thinking Supervisor Don Meyer would have asked for that, so I didn't want to step on his toes. So I thought this was another way around.
Well, we'll just pretend he was the one who asked. So
okay.
We'll put it on a future agenda because I think, yes, seeing those maps would be useful and giving an update.
So well, far. And especially, I mean, I think the timing of the lease is significantly different. It used to be a spring item, and so I think it would be helpful to see that.
Charlie can also point out the various easements that we're trying to deal with and so forth. I think it would be useful to get an explanation so people understand where we're at, and more significantly, where we're at today compared to where we were even this spring. There have been a number of developments there. We are really making some good progress, in my opinion, so I think it would be timely. Jim Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question about some dates that are coming up in November. Do we have a date for the annual meeting yet?
That Monday, approximately the 10th?
Eighth. Okay, so the annual meeting will be at the 8th. And then as part of our past practice, once the annual meeting is complete, we will get into the agenda for the monthly meeting for November.
That would be my plan. We'd start at 6 o'clock with the public hearing. And once we're done with the public hearing, we would start our regular agenda, the non-budget-related things. And once that agenda is done, then if depending upon how late it is, we would do any budget start any budgetary things. And then we start the next morning, the 9th, at 9 o'clock.
9 o'clock. Thank you.
Don Vina.
I've been reading about, and I'd like a little more information about our change of policy out at the landfill for collecting drugs. I'm not sure. I read a lot from the state and the papers, but we change our policy out there, and I'd like to know a little bit more about it than what I do now, because our drugs are being flushed down the drain again, as I understand.
Well, it wasn't us that changed the policy. It was the feds that basically.
I'd like to hear about it.
Yeah. Well, let's get an update. Steve, can you ask Hank to do up an overview that can go into your monthly report? I think people should hear that, because that's a perfect example of where we had a great arrangement going, and then I got screwed up by somebody else. So I think people should hear that. So if Hank can pull something together for that, I think that'd be really good.
And there's a solid waste open house tomorrow. You can go and ask.
You can also ask at the, yeah.
Yeah.
But we'll get to that in the report, too. Jim Burns.
Just to answer that question, there are quarterly pickups for prescription drugs at the solid waste, at the House that has this waste building. There are quarterly pickups. I think the next one's coming up, I think it's the first full week in October. Is that correct, Mr. Malley?
Well, let's get that in the report then, too. That'd be good. Thank you. Anybody else? Ralph Geary.
Well, a few months ago, we had that presentation on indirect costs, and I think somebody said that we didn't include them in some people's budgets because the county board made a decision not to include them in some. And I don't recall when we did that. I think those indirect costs should annually be brought up, and the county board should decide if they fall into the appropriate budget because we're doing the budget.
Yes, Supervisor Geary, and I predicted Monday night that Ray Ebert would make proposals to amend what that was in your packet, and I included a sheet that indicated each and every one of those, and we'll find out if I am a soothsayer, because that list is there, and it shows you exactly what's been determined and what's included in the budget. So if you want to make motions, that's your prerogative.
Okay.
But it's in one of the handouts that was given to you Monday night. Seriously.
So you do have the information.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, we were told that somehow the county board and previous ones had made a decision not to include them, and I don't even remember that occurring. But
it's been discussed at your executive committee virtually every year, and when you adopt the budget, you actually make a policy decision because that's what part of the budget is based on. It's included as a line item in non-departmental, but we'll discuss it in as much detail as you would like.
Yeah,
the county board, when you adopt the budget, actually sets that.
Yeah, but we didn't understand that the line item in non-departmental was composed of items that could have fell into some other budgets.
I think some supervisors have understood that.
Well, but it wasn't brought before.
All right, any further announcements or other important things we need to deal with? Jerry Sobranek.
Thank you. Just a point to ponder. If you're riding ahead of the herd, take a look back every now and then to make sure it's still there. With that, I move to adjourn.
Moved adjourned by Jerry Sobranek, seconded by Bill Fee. And all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.